On Friday night, the Toronto Raptors and Houston played in a game that was arguably as big a regular season game as the Raptors have played in their history. A battle of number ones in the East and West. Sportsnet carried the game and had an average of 552,000 viewers, the highest, the most watched regular season Raptor game ever on Canadian television. A total of 1.67 million Canadians tuned in to see some or all of that game. And what a game it was. The head coach of the East number one team, Dwayne Casey, joins us on the telephone. Coach, nice weekend. How are you?
Good weekend, Bob. I didn't know that about the TV. That's impressive. I mean, that's kind of what you want to have and you're building to have as far as your team is concerned.
Well, it's indicative not only of the quality of the matchup, but of the run that you guys have been on, which has been extraordinary and in some ways overshadowed by Houston's 17-game winning streak, which you brought an end to. But you can make the argument that the Raptors have played played this way literally for weeks now, months. What's not to like about the way the team's playing, generally speaking? Not much, huh?
Well, you know, we're playing well. And again, like I tell the players all the time, you know, the only way you get recognition, you don't sit and pout about it. You got to go out and continue to win and be consistent winning and let the numbers speak for themselves. And I think that's the way our guys have approached it. I was really worried about Sunday's game, Bob, and the fact that, you know, you have an emotional game Friday night, the night at the Detroit game. It was a tough game, overtime game. So that was draining. So now you come back and play a team whose record's not great. They're playing the young guys, and you play a 1 o'clock game. So it had all the makings for a trap game, and I thought our guys fought through it. Our young kids, they don't know any better, so they came out and played hard, they were energetic, and really I was proud of the way they had a professional approach about Sunday's game.
Coach, we spend a fair bit of time in this business talking about the lack of recognition in America for this team, but you alluded to it there. Is it a subject of conversation within the room, on the bus, when you're around the team? Do you hear this conversation? The players are clearly aware of it, but does it bother them?
They're very aware of it. And again, I think they use it as a motivational tool in the fact that we know how, you know, great our city is. We know all the pluses about our team. But, whatever the advertising, not being able to be on national television as much, how that game Friday night could not be on national TV in the U.S., it blows my mind. You know, you got the two top teams in the respective conferences playing, no matter whether it's Toronto or Boston or whoever, they're playing on a Friday night. So, it blows my mind to know. But I think our guys use it as motivation, Bob. They take it with a chip on the shoulder. And again, you know, more than anything else, they use it to fuel them to continue to win, to continue to play hard, just to prove, hey, you know, we're doing something special in Toronto. But what bothers me more than anything else is, you know, you hear the narrative, the stories about how Toronto plays great in the regular season. They flame out in the playoffs. Well, guess who we flamed out against was, 23 in Cleveland, you know. So that's the kind of the lazy narrative of a lot of the media in the U.S. and some of the people who you know, don't follow Toronto enough. And the only thing they've heard, okay, they got beat 2 years in a row by Cleveland. Well, one was in the conference finals, the other was in the semifinals. So I think it's just something that, you know, we just got to keep doing what we're doing at a high level. And, you know, I think they'll finally get the picture amongst the so-called U.S. media.
Dwayne, how much do you have to manage expectations, growing expectations on a day-to-day basis, especially the expectations that are external?
Richard, it's very important because we know who we are. And I said it the other night. win or lose in the Friday night game, against Houston, win or lose, it doesn't make or break your season. And that's those type of things are important to us not to manage. It's a big game. Like you said, it was widely watched. But it doesn't make or break your season whether you lose it or win it, because it's a marathon. We got to continue to go on. And I always say we're still not a finished product. Our young guys still are improving every day, every game. And it's not like we're a veteran-made team, say like Golden State, who's won the championship before. We still have a lot to prove. So internally, we keep preaching we haven't done anything, even after the game against Houston. We kept on talking about how we still, it's a journey, it's a marathon, and we haven't got to the end of the road yet. So let's don't celebrate. Let's enjoy till midnight, and let's get up tomorrow and get ready for New York.
Dwayne, let me be the 70th person to ask you this, but it is such an important question. It needs to be asked repeatedly.
Okay.
And that is, the convention, as you know, historically in the playoffs, is to shorten your bench. Mm-hmm. It's to play eight, mm-hmm. maybe play nine. Mm-hmm. You have such an exceptional bench this year. You look at the analytics. It has won you games. It's arguably the best bench in the league. I'm sure maybe people in Golden State think otherwise. Have you started to think, as you head to the playoffs, whether you would shorten your rotation or whether you would approach the playoffs in the same way you have approached the regular season?
Well, we've talked about it together as a staff, and we've gone all over the analytics, all the numbers. And again, if they have a handbook or a book that says you got to play, you can't play your bench, you got to cut it to seven or eight players, I want to see that handbook or whatever that rule book is that says that. I mean, I know in Seattle when we went to the finals against Chicago, we didn't shorten our bench. We played, everybody played, and so there's been scenarios where you don't have to really shorten your bench. And I think that, again, that's something that is a storyline, and we don't have to. Now, whether, it was injuries or fatigue, foul trouble and stuff like that, those things play a factor. But, we plan on playing the way we play. Who would you take out, Richard? Who would you take out of the second unit? That's the question. And, again, there may be games where matchups it may be driven or something like that we may have to get a bigger body or a smaller body on a player. So it's different variables that could dictate that. But we're going into the playoffs and to these last games, thinking with the thought that we've got to play with our second unit as long as we're productive and successful in those. And, because, again, I think there's someone's fantasy out there that you have to play seven or eight guys in the playoffs, and I don't think that's a hard written rule that you have to do that.
Well, here's some numbers for you, Coach, to chew over. I'm sure you're aware of them, but the bench is averaging 48.9 points per game, number one in the NBA, a point differential of plus 10.1 points per game, number one in the NBA. And and I can't remember, honestly, I don't know why, but I'm blanking on whether it was against Houston or against New York. But this weekend, in one of those two games, the bench, I think, scored 69 points, which is an all-time record for a Raptor bench. You would probably know more accurately than I which of those two games it was. I mean, this bench is playing. Let me throw that into a question now. Did you see this coming? Did you see these five guys, essentially, who aren't in your starting rotation, who have, in many cases, very little NBA experience, a year, two, for the most part. Was this even, did you see the chance that this might happen?
Well, we talked about going into the season, Bob, that we wanted to develop the young guys and try to win at the same time, which, as you know, is very difficult to do. Did we see as an organization these guys are going to play this well to be the best bench in the NBA? No. But I did see the work ethic. I saw the camaraderie that these guys had. They worked the entire summer together. Most of them lived in L.A., the individual workouts together that they had there. I saw the improvement that a guy like Pascal Siakam and Jakob Poeltl were making individually. DeLon Wright was making individually. Because by right, I thought that Norm Powell would still would be a big part of that second unit, and he's kind of been between the first unit and some with the second unit. But again, no, we didn't see them as a unit being in the top second unit in the NBA. But I knew that they were going to be important parts of what we were trying to do. But I didn't see it coming together as a unit collectively the way they have. And it's been beautiful to watch, fun to watch, fun to coach. You can get on their butts and they're going to, do what you ask them to do. And it's fun. But also, too, at the same time, as Richard said, managing expectations is huge. And so are there going to be nights that they just can't get it done? Yes. They had a tough night in Detroit the other night. They just couldn't get enough points on the board to stand, so we had to ramp up Kyle and DeMar's minutes. So managing the expectation with the second unit to understand they're still a young group, they're going to make mistakes, and I tell them all the time, as long as you make hard mistakes, it's okay. Play hard. Play free. But there's going to be nights that they're going to make a lot of mistakes and not sometimes be able to score as much as they need to. And what has happened, Bob, other teams have come in and started putting their starters back in early.
Right.
Having their starters play bigger minutes, which they're adjusting to them, which is a compliment to our young guys. So it's going to be a chess match. And again, Rich's great point, according to the situation, matchup-wise, matchup-driven, and until they're not productive, we're going to go in with our second unit and our game plan with our guys. And then it becomes a chess match. Other teams may bring their starters back in early in the playoffs, which is going to ramp up their minutes while our starters are resting. So it's going to be a fun playoff run and, again, to see what these young guys are going to do under fire.
Lost in this, and I acknowledge that it's mostly our fault, our meaning those of us in the media who focus so much on the second unit and their success, is that DeMar won another Player of the Week award. That's five this year. And just to put it in context, he had five Player of the Week awards in his career before this year.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, and it's an interesting scenario because for the last few years, and you would acknowledge this, it has been all about DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. And if they go, if they have a big night, Raptors can beat anybody. If they're off, it's going to be problematic. Well, it isn't that way anymore. But while we focused on one aspect of this team, here's your number one player, almost inarguably, having a tremendous year and now starting to be recognized for it. And I think that's important, don't you?
There's no question. And again, being out there with him at the All-Star game was beautiful because he was at home. It was almost like a tribute to him being out there, his family being able to be there, his dad being able to be there.
Right.
In bad health. And Larry Tannenbaum did a beautiful thing. He, here's an owner taking day out of his, time out of his weekend out there to go and visit with DeMar's dad. And that touched DeMar more than anything. And I thought that was just a beautiful gesture. And I know Larry probably wouldn't want me to say that to anyone, but that was a beautiful thing for him to go take his time to go visit with his ailing father. But again, DeMar has done so much for our team, and he does it in a quiet way. He's not boisterous. He's not, out, beating his chest. He just goes about his job. And to show you the improvement of our team, yesterday, DeMar scores 9 points. And doesn't have a great game, but yet and still we win by almost 30 points. So, that's the growth he's made. He's understanding what he has to do to help us win, not necessarily all the time being the leading scorer. One night he may be a passer. One night he may be the pick-and-roll guy coming off, drawing to, kicking the ball out. So his ego and his maturity has allowed him to grow into the player he is. And like you said, the NBA is recognizing that. Coaches are recognizing that. Today he had a meeting with Adam Silver, had him over to his office to talk to him about the health of the league and, what's going on in the league and everything. So that's a tribute to DeMar's maturity, what he's done for our franchise, what he means to the NBA as a whole.
Dwayne, that's interesting to me. Was Adam Silver, did he decide to have that conversation because of DeMar's public discussion about mental health? We saw that followed up with Kevin Love. Kevin Love specifically made it clear that DeMar was the reason or the inspiration for him to write that Players Tribune piece. Was that, as far as you understand, the center of that discussion, or was it something else with Adam Silver?
I don't know. I wasn't in the meeting, Rich. I wasn't there, and I haven't seen DeMar since he went over to talk to him. He went after practice. But, you know, I'm sure it was a multi-faceted conversation over there, from my understanding, as far as the league is concerned. But I'm sure that that topic would come up, which is, I think, another tribute to DeMar, to his maturity, what he's added to the league and to help the league. And like you said, for him to come out the way he did and speak about that, it allowed other players around the league to open up and not, in the, you know, to do away with the stigma that sometimes the stigma that, you know, if you have a mental health problem has. And so I'm sure that topic came up in the conversation. I wasn't there. I wasn't invited. So I'm sure that was one of the many topics that they would talk about.
Dwayne, you were recently profiled by Lee Jenkins in Sports Illustrated. It was a really fascinating look at your life in full. And we got a sense of your personal life. Your wife was in the piece, learned about, at least I did, some thing, your jobs prior to the Raptors job, including cleaning rails in a coal mine. Mm-hmm. Is it, was that, how, what is it like when someone asks you these kind of questions? And it seemed clear that you were willing to put your journey out there for the public. Was the thought that maybe some people could take something from your journey? Because this was not, this life you have now was not given to you. You had a lot of steps prior to becoming the head coach of the Raptors.
Well, no question, Rich. That's the thing about it, is the fact that, you know, when I worked in the coal mines when I was a college student, I did that to make extra money and down underground. And all, everything I've done in my life is almost formed my entire personality. So that's, Lee wanted to come and do an article about that. Some of it was about the stereotype that you have, that sometimes fans have, of college assistant coaches that are, you know, get the stigma and the association of being just a recruiter and not a coach. So we talked about that. But the journey getting to anywhere, I'm sure Bob can attest to this, you can attest to this, to get your show is one of the top shows there in Canada. To get there, there's a lot of steps you got to take, and it's not easy. And if it's easy, everyone would be doing it. So my message to young coaches, to young African-American coaches specifically, is to say, hey, get involved in coaching, learn coaching. It's not easy. You may have to go to two or three different routes to get there, but, you know, keep your nose to the grind. Learn your craft, understand the game, be able to teach the game, and don't be known as he's a player's coach or he's a communicator. You know, that used to burn me more than anything to for people to say, hey, you know, he's a communicator. No, I understand the game as well as anyone else, and I take pride in that. And so, but you got to go and learn it. It's not going to be given to you, and you have to work to do it. And I appreciate all the coaches that I work with and work for to give me an opportunity to learn the game from them, to see how they taught the game, to steal some things from them, and that type of thing. So, and Bob would understand this. Growing up in a small town in Kentucky, our grandmother worked for a governor. She was a caretaker for the former governor of Kentucky, Earl C. Clemens, who was best friends with Happy Chandler, who was the commissioner of baseball. So
that's right.
You know, having those relationships and all those things were great. And again, the journey going through life, you know, you learn so much, you meet so many people, but it's helped form the person that I am, the way that I am, the way that I teach, the way that I coach. Am I perfect? No. But, you know, it was good for me to be able to do that for Sports Illustrated. And I didn't know which way they were going to go. I thought they were going to come and try to do a remembrance about all the stuff that happened at Kentucky and try to tie it into all the stuff that's going on now in college basketball. And I told them I didn't want to do that. I I'd rather do something with more substance than that, because that was 30 years ago. So he did a great piece. Lee did an excellent job. He spent time in Toronto, got a feel for what we were doing with the Raptors, the feel for, with the players, came and met my family. And so I really appreciate that. And hopefully, again, also, too, to put a spotlight on what we're trying to accomplish in Toronto, which is to win a world championship.
Before we let you go, I mean, we spent some time talking about the lack of respect, as we have a lot here in the U.S. market for the Toronto Raptors. The aforementioned Sports Illustrated released their power ratings or rankings in the NBA today. Have you seen them by any chance?
No, I have not. No, I haven't seen them.
Well, the Toronto Raptors are number one.
Really?
Yep. ESPN's not giving you quite as much love. You're still number three behind the Rockets and the Warriors, but Sports Illustrated has ranked the Toronto Raptors the number one power rank team in the NBA. Congratulations. It's not a title. You can't really hang it on the wall. You're not going to go polish it every day, but a lot of people here think that that day might not be too far away.
Well, we got the Brooklyn Nets tomorrow night, who are chomping at the bit, who are trying to do everything they can to still win. So we'll have our work cut out for us tomorrow night, Bob. So again, it's still good though. We'll take it. We embrace it. Embrace the pressure that comes with it. The expectations, you can't really control that. We got to understand that internally, externally. I don't think you can control that, but understand that. You know, it's not easy. We still have some work to do to get where we want to go.
Coach, we always appreciate your time. Good luck with Brooklyn, and we'll chat with you down the road. Thank you a lot.
Thank you so much, Bob. Thank you, buddy. See you guys later.